But this week, just kind of thinking about, if you're involved in my life for any amount of time, there's a good chance you're going to find yourself in one of my sermons. You just will. That's just kind of how it works. And so that's just the way it is. But I love guiding trophy hunts and doing deer feeders and all that kind of stuff. And not too long ago, we were out doing, filling up the feeders. And sometimes that can be some good hard work. But you know what? It has to happen. Because the deer need to come in and eat something so that the hunters can come in and shoot it. And everybody thinks, well, it's just a canned hunt. It's people think that they're going to come up, eat out of your hand, and then you shoot them in the head. For some reason, that's just the way that they think it is. And a lot of these deer that we deal with, you can drive right by them in a Polaris and they don't even move. They just stand there or they'll lay there and you just can't even tell that they're there from 20 feet away. And so you go out there and you're filling feeders. And not too long ago, I was with a couple guys and we were filling the feeders up. And the ladder wasn't tall enough to get to this one corn feeder. So one of the guys said, just back the Polaris up here and we'll stick the ladder on the Polaris and you can shimmy up that ladder and get up there. And then we'll hand you 50-pound bags of corn. I was like, that's a crazy idea. What are you thinking? So I'm climbing up the ladder while it's on the Polaris. Right? And I'm just thinking, oh, my Lord, this could not be good. And so we got the Polaris back to the ladder sitting there. He's going, don't worry. Don't worry, princess, he says. I've got you. I was like, I'm not a princess. And so we get there up there. And so while we're getting it all set up, the guy on the ground, he just looks at us and he goes, what could go wrong? I was like, I could think about a million things right now. I think about a million things that could go wrong right now. And so I read the Old Testament. I love reading the Old Testament a lot. And I was just reading about David and his little fling with Bathsheba. I kept thinking, I had this all written out, but I didn't have that intro until my friends helped me have that. What could go wrong? So we're looking at 2 Samuel chapter 11. I'll let you get to that. It's in the Old Testament. Sometimes it helps at the beginning of your Bible. Of course, you Google it now. You got your Bible app and stuff. You just take it right to you. It'll tell you what page it's on. It's pretty handy. Chapter 11 of 2 Samuel. And I'm just going to read the first verse. It says, in the spring, at the time when kings go off to war, David sent Joab out with the king's men and the whole Israelite army. They destroyed the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah, but David remained in Jerusalem. So in the spring, apparently, is when they all went out to war. Everybody knows you don't go to war in the winter. It's too cold. I mean, think about it, though. The times have changed quite a bit. Literally, you don't go out in the winter because you can freeze to death. So spring comes, and you can imagine all the boys getting ready. We're going to go pillage and mess around people and get all kinds of good stuff. At the time in the spring when the kings go out to war, David said, you know what? I'm going to let the boys handle this one. I'm going to stay back. It's good to be king. They believed that he was a little over 50 years old at this time. And he was like, I'm tired. You boys go take care of this. I'm going to stay back and I'm going to hang out. What could go wrong? Well, we'll find out. One evening, David got up, verse 2 to 3. One evening, David got up from his bed and walked around on the roof of the palace. From the roof, he saw a woman bathing. The woman was very beautiful, and David sent someone to find out about her. The man said, she is Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, and the wife of Uriah the Hittite. So if King David, he's out on the roof. He's seen many, many beautiful women. He has multiple wives and concubines that you know aren't going to be ugly. The king has this. And so he sees this beautiful woman out there. And then he says, he sends to find out about her. And they said, you know what? She is Uriah's wife. That is Uriah's wife. And so you just think, okay, problem solved. It's all good. She's a married woman. But he couldn't see that because she was bathing. Right? And so he finds out about her. She's married. It's all good. David has many wives and concubines. It's all good. Now, let me tell you about Uriah, who this is. In 2 Samuel 23, it says that Uriah is listed among David's mighty men. And so he's one of his mighty men, a great warrior and an honorable man. So David would have known this man. And they would not have lived very far from the castle. And so David knows this guy. It's okay. She's married. No problem. What could go wrong? Verse 4. Then David sent messengers to get her. She came to him and he slept with her. Now she had purified herself from her uncleanness. Then she went back home. Oopsie. So he sends for her. He makes love to her. And then he sends her home. So you just kind of think, they made a mistake. It's over for now. It's all good. Send her on home. Nobody is none the wiser. It's all over with now. That's what you think. Verse 5. The woman conceived and sent word to David saying, I am pregnant. Oh, no. The one time. Right? Well, okay, it's really not a big deal. We'll go down to Walgreens and get the day after pill. Right? That's all we got to do. Or we can just send her over to the clinic and let her have an abortion. Let me tell you something. They didn't have all of that stuff back then. And that is the craziest news that he could have probably ever gotten. So now what does he do? He sleeps with somebody that's not his wife. And then she sends word, I'm pregnant. So he's the king. What is he going to do now? Well, he comes up with this grand idea that we're going to see how this works out for him. Verse 6 to 8. So David sent word to Joab, who was his commander of his army. Send me Uriah the Hittite. And Joab sent him to David. When Uriah came to him, David asked him how Joab was, how the soldiers were doing, and how the war was going. Then David said to Uriah, go down to your house and wash your feet. So Uriah left the palace, and a gift from the king was sent after him. So you see how David's mind was working? Mess up. Rather than just fess up, he just says, I'm just going to keep rolling this lie along. It could be really humiliating for the king of the whole place to be caught in adultery. I mean, think about it. What was the law back then if you were caught in adultery? You were stoned to death. You were killed. That did not. It was still happened for David. Just because he was king didn't mean that it wouldn't happen to him and Bathsheba. And so he said, he brings him in and he has a little small talk with him. Well, how's it going out at the war? How are the boys doing out there? I accidentally slept with your wife and she's pregnant. That's basically what's been happening here. It's not a real big deal. So he has all this small talk, and you just think, man, what is going on here? I mean, he could have done whatever he wanted, but what's his purpose here? He says, go home, put your feet up. Your wife is gorgeous. So what's he think's going to happen? He's been out in the field. So he goes, he thinks, well, he's going to go home and he's going to make love to his wife. Then they'll think that it's his wife, I mean, his son or child that's going to be born, and I'm in the clear. Nobody will know anything different. Well, that's why they write the story, because it keeps going. And so we're going to see what happens in here, what could go wrong. Verse 9. But Uriah slept at the entrance to the palace with all his master's servants and did not go down to his house. What? How do you come out for being at war in a tent, filthy, nasty, come in, have an opportunity to go around the block to your wife who is gorgeous and not do that? He sleeps on his mat with the other servants at the palace. David is thinking the exact same thing. What is wrong with you? You're ruining my plan. You're ruining it. So verse 10 to 11, he says, David was told Uriah did not go home. So he asked Uriah, haven't you just come from a military campaign? Why didn't you go home? Uriah said to David, the ark and Israel and Judah are staying in tents, and my commander Joab and my Lord's men are camped in the open country. How could I go to my house to eat and drink and make love to my wife? As surely as you live, I will not do such a thing. David said, it's pretty easy. That's how. You come home, you go see your wife, I send you back out, it's all good. It's no problem. But look at this guy. How honorable can you get? He picked the wrong woman. Her husband is so honorable that he won't even do something like go home to his own wife because all the men are out there. And I couldn't do that. And you know that he's right there in front of David going, you know what, sir? I'm an honorable man. I won't do that. I couldn't do that to you. I couldn't do it to the men. It wouldn't be right. And what's David going to say? You're right. But go back down to your house, please. I beg of you. Go down to the house. And so he's stuck there in this situation. So now what does David do? Now's the time to confess. Now's the time to make things right. He's not finished. He's not finished. And in verse 12 to 13, here's what he does. Then David said to him, stay here one more day, and tomorrow I will send you back. So Uriah remained in Jerusalem that day and the next. David's invitation, he ate and drank with him, and David made him drunk. But in the evening, Uriah went out to sleep on his mat among the master's servants. He did not go home. First one didn't work. I know what I'll do. I'll get him drunk. All drunk people do stuff. Crazy. Right? I mean, for sure he'll wander around the corner to his house. I'm going to get him drunk. This is going to solve all my problems. He's going to go home. And now maybe he got him too drunk. Maybe he made it out to the patio and passed out on his mat. We don't know what all happened, but we know that this guy's honorable. And David is like, have another, please. Oh, and another. Now go home to your wife. She's been missing you. She has been missing you. And so he still doesn't go home. Now what do we do? And you think as an honorable man like King David, and if you've ever read about his life, one of the most honorable men that we've ever read about in the Bible, you would think that he would certainly just finally just give it up and go, I've messed up. I messed up. And in verse 14 to 15, it says this, in the morning, David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it with Uriah. Now, he wrote a letter to Joab and sent it with Uriah. In it, he wrote, put Uriah out in front where the fighting is fiercest. Then withdraw from him so that he will be struck down and die. Imagine that. You have a letter in your hand sealed by the king with your own death warrant in it. And all he had to do is if he just appealed that open and read it, he'd been like, something's off. Something's wrong. I go back to the king. Someone's trying to kill me. Yeah, it's me. Now just go home to your wife. But he's so honorable, he sends his own death warrant with him. And this guy goes, and he goes anyway and delivers it to Joab. Can you imagine Joab, who's got 30 of his best fighting men, he reads this from David, and he says, listen, you're supposed to put one of my best men up front and move back so that he'll be killed? Are you kidding me? This cannot be from King David. But you do not go against the king. You do not go against the king or you get killed. And so in the next verses, Joab does what David told him to do. And Joab, the commander of the army, he puts Uriah where the fighting was the fiercest and they withdrew from him and he gets killed. Better yet, probably the better term was that he got murdered. He gets murdered by David, and he goes off there, and Joab knew that after every war, Joab would have to send an account to everybody that died. And David sometimes would get upset as the king and go, why did you use that tactic? That was foolish. And you could get in big trouble if somebody died in the war with David as the king. And so Joab sends word back to David, and he goes, listen, here's the report. And if the king gets mad, what you need to do is you just need to say, hey, King, I want you to know, Joab told me to tell you that some of our guys died, but Uriah was one of them. And that will ease his anger. And sure enough, he tells him, and Uriah died with one of them. And the king, King David looks and he goes, listen, that happens in war. People die. I wonder if that's all we knew about David and that's the only story we ever read about David, what would you think about him? I would hate him. And I would go, you know what? This guy is the scum of the earth. But I've read my Bible through, and this guy is considered a man after God's own heart. Isn't that crazy? But you know what else? He makes mistakes. He's a human being, and he made a terrible mistake. And rather than just fess up and deal with it, he made it worse and worse and worse. And he's thinking, I got away with it. I did it. Now he's gone, and everything is good. And look what he does in verse 26 and 27. When Uriah's wife heard that her husband was dead, she mourned for him. After the time of mourning was over, David had her brought to his house, and she became his wife and bore him a son. But the thing David had done displeased the Lord. Now all is well. All is well except for the last phrase. The thing that David had done displeased the Lord. So this time passes, and they have the child. They have this child, and David is just going about as if nothing had happened because he thinks he got away with it, and he's just moving forward and moving forward and moving forward. And now Bathsheba is now his wife. They've had a son. They've had this son, and God did not forget. And in chapter 12, verse 1 to 6, I'll show you how crafty the Lord is. It said, the Lord sent Nathan, who was a prophet, to David. When he came to him, he said, there are two men in a certain town, one rich and the other poor. The rich man had a very large number of sheep and cattle, but the poor man had nothing except one little ewe lamb, which he had bought. He raised it, and it grew up with him and his children. It shared his food, drank from his cup, and even slept in his arms. It was like a daughter to him. Now a traveler came to the rich man, but the rich man refrained from taking one of his own sheep or cattle to prepare a meal for the traveler who had come to him. Instead, he took the ewe lamb that belonged to the poor man and prepared it for the one who had come to him. David burned with anger against the man and said to Nathan, as surely as the Lord lives, this man who did this deserves to die. He must pay for the lamb four times over because he did such a thing, and he had no pity. What a story. Can you imagine someone telling you that story? They tell you the story and they're asking you, what do you think we should do? And David immediately burns with anger. That guy deserves to die, or at least pay four times what is owed to him for that sheep that he took. He had all these other sheep and he could have took any one. And so David is furious. David is absolutely furious. And in verse 7 to 9, it says, then Nathan said to David, you are that man. You are that man. This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I anointed you king over Israel, and I delivered you from the hand of Saul. I gave your master's house to you and your master's wives into your arms. I gave you all of Israel and all of Judah. If all this had been too little, I would have given you more. Why did you despise the word of the Lord by doing what is evil in his eyes? You struck down Uriah the Hittite with the sword and took his wife to be your own. You killed him with the sword of the Ammonites. The cleverness of God to bring this prophet in and to give him that word. And he comes out and he says, man, if you would have just asked me for more, how about that for God? If that would not have been enough, I gave your master's wives to you. You have everything you could ever want, and it was still not enough. And you had to take somebody else's wife and have him killed in the process. And so it's just absolutely blows my mind that David could be capable of this. But it absolutely blows my mind what I'm capable of. At the point that we think that we're not capable of doing the most crazy things in the world, you're probably at your weakest spot. Where was David? He was at his highest spot. I mean, he was the king of the land, and he got complacent. It happens to all of us. In one circumstance or another, it happens to all of us, and that's when we're our weakest, and it you never know what could happen. Now, what are the consequences of this? David confesses to them. He says, you're right. I've sinned against the Lord. Now he confesses because he got caught. So now he confesses and he said, the Lord has taken away your sin. You will not die. You remember the rule of law in the land was that you die. So he says, I've sinned against the Lord. And he goes, yeah, he knows. And that's why you're not dead. But there will be consequences. And he said, the sword will never leave your home because of this. And let me tell you something. If you read on through it, one of his sons rapes one of his daughters. And then the brother of that daughter that got raped ends up killing the other son because he did that to her. We talk about heartbreak. Then Absalom comes in and he tries to take the kingdom from him. And then he takes David's wives on top of the building and sleeps with them in front of everybody to mock his own father. Man, isn't that crazy? This is Old Testament stuff here. This stuff is happening all over the place. And here he also loses his son to Bathsheba. They lose their son on top of it all. Well, I thought he was forgiven, though. He was. That's why he's not dead. Well, what did the child do? I mean, think about that. What did the child do to deserve that? I can promise you, if you're a child and you grow up in heaven, you'll be glad that you didn't have to grow up here. I just thought, how lucky that child is sometimes. You think about some of those. We've had children that have been lost and very close to some of them. And you just think, what? Why, God? And at the same time, when you watch our country go to hell, you go, man, that kid is so such a better place than us. Maybe God spared them from having to deal and look at all this stuff. I mean, I talked to my friends and we talk about the news and it's just over. Just forget it. All of a sudden, we're in a state of depression. We have to go into a prayer meeting. I'm telling you, it happens. And I didn't watch news all week this past week for the most part. I had such a great week. And then I'll turn it back on this week and I'll go, same old junk. Same old junk that it's been. I used to get really, really worked up. I'm going to make a difference in this country. I'm going to start a church and we're going to make a big difference. Oh, come on. And the narrative is still the same as when I watched it 20 years ago. We're in more debt. We're further away from God, and it's getting crazier. And you kind of think, when is God going to have his fill? I just want to be ready. God, how do you want to use me, not for my glory, but for your glory? How do you want to use me in all of this? And so here we have David's got his son who's sick, and he starts fasting for 7 straight days. God, please. Please don't kill my son. Please don't kill my son. Please don't take him. After 7 days, his son dies. You know what David does after that? He gets up, cleans himself up, and he goes and worships. Woo! I don't know how. I don't know how. And how does Romans 8:28 come in where he says, and we know that in all things God works for the good of those that love him. How does that even fit into these kinds of stories? But the story wasn't over. He loses his son. He goes back into Bathsheba, and they have another child. You know who that child is? That child is Solomon. The greatest king to ever live, or who will ever live according to God. I think I'll take his word at that. He comes in, and Solomon is born out of this adulterous, murdering relationship, and God gives them this child, and he was not even supposed to be king, but he promises David it's going to happen through Bathsheba, and they end up having Solomon, and he says, Solomon, now that you're king, you can have whatever you want. Can you imagine if a king came to you and said, hey, you can have whatever you want, you just ask me. I'm going to give it to you. Whoa, man, could you give me a day to think about that? Because there's a lot of things to ask for. I'm not really sure. And Solomon goes, you know what? I don't know anything about taking care of your people. Would you please give me the wisdom and discernment to take care of your people? And I can imagine that God just must have broken into tears and going, that's David's son, a man after my own heart, who gave me that kind of response. And he was so moved in his heart. He said, not only am I going to give you the wisdom to do that, I'm going to give you all the wealth and all the riches and everything else with it. I'm going to give you that. So out of this crazy, adulterous, murdering relationship comes one of the greatest kings, well, the greatest king that has ever been known to man and will ever be known to man. That's pretty crazy what God can do out of crazy circumstances. I mean, Solomon writes, he writes Proverbs. He writes Song of Solomon. I don't understand that book, so don't even ask me. I mean, it kind of gets weird to me. I mean, if you've ever read that book, it's supposed to be this love letter and all this. It's just, I don't know. It's weird. Because they're talking about your teeth look like goat stuff and all this. But I'm like, what? That's weird. I mean, it's supposed to be some kind of a compliment. I don't get it. But anyway, he writes it. It must have been really amazing at the time. Ecclesiastes, he writes that. Meaningless, meaningless, everything's meaningless. The only thing that makes sense is when we hang out with God and get to know him. That's the only way we can have joy in this life. All of this drama that David went through is avoided with one choice that he made. And that was the very first verse that we read. At the time in the spring when kings go off to war, David stayed home. All of that is avoided. All of this craziness is avoided if he would have been where he was supposed to be. The story of my life. Oh, I could have avoided so much junk if I'd have just been where I'm supposed to be. And David could have avoided all of that. I'm trying to think of what lessons can we learn from this? Be where you're supposed to be. But then some people are like, well, then we wouldn't have that crazy story. I think David would appreciate it not having that crazy story. And so then I wonder how different it would have turned out if he had just repented. I'm going to bring the band up. They got a new song that they're going to play for you as we close it out. What if he'd have just repented when he messed up? He said, Lord, I've sinned against you. I'm so sorry. Could you please help me? Instead of creating another lie, another lie, another lie, and another lie. I have lied so many times before on one issue, I forgot what my lies were. Well, I thought you said this. Did I? I'm so dumb. I can't believe I said that. Yeah, that's what you said. I'm like, oh man, I got to stop lying. And then you tell another lie to cover that up. I mean, we think that sometimes these things just don't matter. But this snowball effect happens. And if we will just stop and if we could just trust that God is better than our screw-ups and that he still loves us. And I just, for so many years, I just thought, God just wants to punish me. He can't wait to punish me. It's like he's looking around the corner. Is James going to do it? I'm going to whack him when he does. It's going to be funny. I mean, I feel like I'm this whack-a-mole. I peek my head out and go, wham! Hit me. That's the way I felt. But as I've gotten to know him more and more and more, I'm learning to trust that even when I don't understand things, that I can trust him and he's still good. And even if I do screw it up, he creates something good out of it because I love him. Woo! Man, if we could get a hold of that in our relationship with him. It's freeing when I go about and I start to do something and I'm scared. Well, I'm not sure if this is going to work. I'm not sure if this is going to work. How's this all going to work? I'm too scared to do this. And God goes, how about you just keep going and you just fail until you don't? I'm like, I can do that. And I'll just keep failing until I don't. I'll just keep trying that. And I keep trying it. But you know who really beats us up? We beat each other up. Or we beat ourselves up. Well, that's too painful. I'm not doing that no more. I'm not even trying anymore. And God goes, why don't you try trusting me? And I could hear in the back of my head, what could go wrong? A lot. The truth is, a lot could go wrong. But you know what else? A lot could go right as well. A lot could go right. After all, that feeder that we are on top of is full. Even in a crazy stunt like putting a ladder on a Polaris, the feeder is full. So whatever it is that God's putting on your heart,
you can trust Him. Whatever it is that you feel like you maybe have made a mess of, you can trust Him. He can make something good out of it for those that love Him. Do we love Him? Yes, we do. Let's pray. Lord, thank you so much for loving us, even when we're unlovable. When we blatantly made decisions that hurt ourselves, that hurt others, there is nothing that can separate us from your love. Yes, there may be consequences, but you will get us through those as well. Because your grace is sufficient for us. So I pray that we experience the power of your grace as we enter into a deeper, more mature relationship with you. And that day after day, we could trust you a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. Thank you for the wisdom and for the guidance that we find in your word. Thank you for King David and the way that he loved you. And that was a man after your own heart. And I pray that you'd help us as we go out throughout this week to get to know you in a more intimate way than we ever have before. In Jesus' name, amen. Would you stand for our last song, please?